And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Just returned from India in all of its complex glory and poison and beauty and all of that. So everything is an incentive for us to welcome our wonderful guest, Lisa Gauthier, as we animate the rising renaissance of reverent ingenuity to concentrate on what we do want. Yes, everything's an incentive to create the templates of wise governance dedicated to collective well-being. We will honor the upcoming People's Climate Summit in San Francisco, Matter of Trust Hair and Fur Project for cleaning up diesel oil spills, Global Compost Project, heartening global work on clean energy, clean water, batteries, and the metaphysics of megaliths, and more. Her website is matteroftrust.org, and she's also on the board of biomimicry.org. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello, thank you so much.
That's really great. So off we go. We had a rousing backstage conversation and so many great things of which we're in accord. Yes, the concentrating on what we do want as the only channel we both really like, Esther Hicks channeling Abraham or whatever she's doing. She says, you know, don't keep banging the drum of the negative what is. Oh, it's terrible. The government's corrupted. We want to use that as incentive. So the recently announced, you can now proclaim to us the upcoming climate summit in San Francisco, right?
Yes. So Governor Jerry Brown is having a global climate action summit, and Al Gore is speaking about it. There's many news stories and press releases about it. San Francisco is the host city, and it's going to be from September 12th to 14th, 2018. And very exciting. I think there's this huge buzz about it as far as nonprofits and schools and just general happiness. You can go to the Global Climate Action Summit website. It'll be an official delegate summit there, and then there's many of us that are excited about the possibility of a community platform for showcasing all of the wonderful ecological innovations and sites in San Francisco and the Bay Area. You know, he is the governor of California, so Los Angeles, Sacramento, San Diego, and it's a global summit, so there'll be many people coming from not only all of the United States and Canada and Mexico, but, you know, people from all over, because really ecological innovation is everywhere.
Exactly. No, and we do want the global inclusivity. Again, we're crossing borders with our magic brooms and dissolving them as we go, going, and I love the, yes, we want to encourage the feisty, creative, you know, resilient work around things, going, all right, that's not happening over there. Here it is happening over here. You know, I love to think of nature's evolutionary genius that, you know, we love to speak with Janine Benyus about, founder of Biomimicry, you know, and that I also term, you know, trickster, you know, in that way. It's the part of us that comes alive, the part of nature that comes alive in crisis, you know, seeds that sprout after cataclysm, and it's that, you know, it's witty and ingenious, and so I love that. And you were running down also just things that I'd heard about, but I didn't know that you were in cahoot with it, the Matter of Trust program on hair and fur. I love that, and so does your dog. That's excellent. Oops.
Sorry, yes, I'm moving away from that. It must be because you're a woof woof station. fine. I'm moving
we do it all for dogs too. That's perfectly great.
The Clean Wave program is a program where we have every salon and every pet groomer with their dog can donate hair, fur, even farmers that have fleece, they can donate fleece. And it's for waste fibers, and we connect it to a factory that we have where we are making felting mats out of these waste fibers, and then we use them both for emergency oil spills, but also for we use them for a system that we have with storm drains, because 50% of the oil that we have in it's amazing, she never does this, I'm so sorry, that we have for the oil that is and the droplets on the street and the asphalt when it rains, all of that water, all of that rushes into our storm drains and into our bays and such. And so they have catchment cages in a lot of these storm drains just for leaf litter and sticks and stuff. And those catchment cages can be lined with these hair mats that will soak up the used motor oil or the drips as it flows into with the rainwater into those storm drains, and it's a way of keeping those contaminants out of our bays. So it's a really great program. We have it. We're using it mostly in Texas right now. But what we want to do is work, because we've set up a factory in California. We want to do more work in California with this, and ideally, we want to set up little depots where the hair can be collected. Like San Francisco, for example, has around 700 hair salons. Many cities could have an after-school program, just like an old paper route where kids go around. It's very light to collect hair. You could just have bags of it on your handlebars or your bike. And you could just collect all the hair and fur and then have like a felting factory, one per city, whatever, and it makes the mats for all of the storm drains that county. I just think it's an amazing project, and it's a zero waste stream that is not being tapped into particularly, and we're very excited about it. We've been doing it for about 19 years. We got a lot of press during the BP oil spill.
Right. Wow. I did like, now your dog chiming in the background going, yes, I'm contributing too for
sorry about that.
No. It's all we welcome all dog participation on this show. I hear that many dogs listen to the show, so they're happy to hear your dog communicating. And just that idea of, it's such a charming, witty, effective, heartening concept. I love this. And as you mentioned, no waste. Many people have defined, what is green, and we go, no waste.
This whole idea of sorting waste into resources. This is a perfect example. We have, salons now that they have a specific plexiglass container where they just put hair, in that, so it doesn't have to be swept up off the floor with cigarette butts or, any sort of dirt or any pins, which are very hard for our felting machines, all that kind of stuff. They can just, take it literally from the cut from their hand, put it into these tall plexiglass containers and show their clients how much this hair is building up. And now it's no longer a waste. Now it's a resource. It's just sorted. You sort waste into resources. And there's many people say there is no waste in nature. Yeah.
Right. No waste, no resource. All resources. And I was certainly thinking about this, and I don't know if you know of David Bloom's work with Alcohol Can Be a Gas, that he's working more globally to create ethanol from garbage, thrown out frozen oranges or whatever the thing is. And everywhere I go, let's speed this thing up, because there's India, look at all the waste, and look at all the need for energy resources. And I know that you're working a great deal on those things and concentrating on us, on all the clean energy and clean water and the battery projects that are going on around the world, that we do want to concentrate on. But yes, so the fuel dynamic, and in the climate summit, September 12th through 14th, being hosted in San Francisco by Governor Brown, but including, you know, so will it be covering many of these things? I mean, is it an umbrella in which, you know, the hair and fur,
yes,
matter of trust project will be included? Yeah.
Well, what we hope to do is for the community involvement is that every program can sort of celebrate or tidy up or create, put energy into a new program for 2018, and just use this as a real catalyst, a time when we can show all the things that are happening. Because really, in the ecological movement, there's so much going on that we who work in it don't even know everything that's going on. Every time I have a meeting, I just had a meeting yesterday, with the executive director of Biomimicry, and I'm on the board, and I'm still learning new stuff about what she's doing. A little plug for Biomimicry. I love Ask Nature, asknature.org. You should go to this resource. It's such a wonderful plethora of information and science, you know, building with people looking at innovations. And as Janine Benia says, 4.5 billion years of R&D done by Mother Nature. You know, always ask nature first before you start beating your head against the wall when you're innovating and designing. Yeah, there's just so much going on that it's really important to, instead of create a whole new conference conferences are wasteful enough themselves, but also just like, let's organize what is already happening, you know, in our own backyard and find out all the great stuff that's happened in the last couple of years with all the groups that are local and all of their affiliates, and just really use this time, this week in September, to be a moment where we collectively all touch base and show the public, show the city, thanks to the media that the governor's summit will be attracting, have that be a way to have all the people that are way beyond the choir be able to see all the goodness that's really going on. I really feel that the ecological movement is soaring right now, and it's just fabulous.
Oh, that's great. No, and as you mentioned, it's like there are so many great allies. It's the confluencing of all allies, time, you know, and so many great projects just kind of one inch apart, and it's that last little inch of connectivity going, there you go, you know, installing the nervous system, which is certainly one function of
the synapses. Exactly, you're right. It's like synapses, yeah.
Yeah, it is the synapse thing. And again, you know, all nature, you know, and that's part of, you know, we share our love of physics, metaphysics, you know, as a dynamic. So, you know, the more we are heartened and we hone our dedication, and it's such a good time for everybody to go, you know, to write their own, you know, manifesto of dedicated devotion. What is everybody dedicated to? It's a good thing to wonder. And as we do that, we do hone our signal, so we're more likely to be danced into place with others with whom we're in accord across many borders. You know, we've spoken about this backstage, that we want to dissolve, you know, no longer relevant, you know, labels of you know, apartness and discord. You know, when I spoke about meeting conservative friends who say, you know, what do you know about Edmund Burke? And I go, oh, not much. And he said, you know, this argument about big government, small government's irrelevant. Edmund Burke said, you know, the more we cultivate inward qualities of responsible citizenship, the fewer outer rules we need. And that's when I said, oh, well, this is, you know, astrology or metaphysics 101 or Taoism. And he goes, I love Taoism. So there's a lot of conversations to be had, you know, that we were having as well, about simultaneous cultivating, you know, what is it to be a mature participatory citizen, you know, and you know, that conversation on, and then we can sort of dissolve the false borders and come up with visions of the desirable that really unite everyone.
One of the things that came up, so we have an eco-industrial hub, Matter of Trust eco-industrial hub in San Francisco, and spent a lot of money to paint all these walls that in huge letters have, you know, a section for clean water, clean air, clean energy. And some people were at a conference at Moscone Center in San Francisco. It's a very large place for symposiums of, you know, all kinds. These people came in and they were, you know, from a red state, and they came in and they're looking at this and very friendly, super helpful looking at it. And they were like, but you know, you really shouldn't say clean air and clean water. Couldn't you just say fresh air and fresh water? Because clean, it makes it sound like, you know, something needs to be cleansed. Something was wrong. It sounds expensive. If you own a factory, it sounds like, oh, I'm going to have to clean all this, you know? And I was like, it's just, you know, but you love playing with words and, you know, the roots of words and what is, how do people hear words in different ways? And I was like, oh, shoot, I just spent all this money painting that, but maybe she's right. Fresh air, fresh water. You know, it's funny, but it's important. So.
Right. Although, you know, I like clean fine. Are you saying that the conservatives found that clean was a democratic term or
exactly? Or, and I hadn't thought of that before. But the idea was that that in order to clean something, it would be expensive. I think was the idea. And you know, so that's an interesting position also, because that means that you're starting from somewhere dirty. It's not expensive if it's always, you know, clean. So to that end, though, she was saying, like, well, if we just say fresh air and fresh water, then it's like, then the nature has it, you know, already fresh. So it was just an interesting, you know, it was an interesting conversation, but very friendly and very open. And I was really glad I had it. I wished I'd had it before it went on the wall. But you know, there's a whole eco-literacy movement, and it would be interesting to see how much are we including in eco-literacy, how much are we including people from all different, you know, walks of life and all different areas to read how are these terms ricocheting off of them, you know? Are they absorbed, right, or are they, you know, it's just interesting. It hadn't occurred to me before she said it, so.
Right.
The benefits of having an eco center.
Actually, where is the Eco Industrial Hub, and how can people go there?
So it's at 1566 Howard Street, between 11th and 12th Streets in the heart of San Francisco, very close to Civic Center and Market Street and everything. And we specifically put it there so that we could have the discussion about why you want to have industry in the middle of a city, so that you bring up the not in my backyard issues, because if you hide it, then, you know, when it's toxic or noisy or smelly or dangerous, then you don't get enough complainers, and the complainers are what are going to move the needle. They're going to be the ones that will insist that design steps in and makes it better, not only for, you know, the neighborhood, but also for the workers inside, and ultimately for the end product, which goes home to you, and, you know, you wear it on your body, or you put the cream on your skin, or you ingest it, or whatever it is. So the more I think the more we make the invisible visible, the more interesting, you know, industry becomes. So, and also people like to see people work. They come on in and see people felting, and, you know, we have a hair salon and a dog groomer inside the space. So we show the full circle. And, so it's good to have, that whole visual, there as our model, factory, and then all of the exhibits are looking at, you know, all kinds of other things. We have a at matteroftrust.org, we have a lady who works for us named Joyce, and we call it Joyce's Choices. And she just is constantly combing the internet for really great innovations. So it's really great to look at that every day, and on our Facebook if you care to. It's fun to see what's happening in industry right now.
No, that is wonderful. And then just as I mentioned, you know, one of the poignant things in India was, you know, was their beautiful rice paddies, and it's all pretty much GMO. I do want my inner Vandana Shiva. I want, you know, a part of Matter of Trust. We all want our inner brain trust, and the farmer pouring, you know, something from Dow Chemical onto the fields, going, it's medicine. They told me it was medicine for the plants. We go, So, but it is that, you know, that quality of did you know, and the, you know, the gentle, strong, you know, educational dynamic that nobody minds being asked, did you know? And especially, right. you know, part of, you know, what we're all engaged in, and you especially, is, you know, oh, farmer in the field, did you know? And here's another way, you know, here's an ancient way. Here's something that's in your wise DNA. You know, I'm going all the way back. So
we have a wall that says that we want, when people come in, it says we want your perspectives and incentives. And I think that if we come in with saying, you know, that either it has to be this way or it's, you know, it should be this way. It's different from saying, like you say, like, did you know, as a kind of like, well, look at this. Here's another door. Let's go investigate together, you know, where could this lead? And it is, I know you like to refer to the trickster sort of thing, but I think it works both ways. I think it's like, it's interesting that, people obviously went in, you know, with Monsanto's or whatever and came in and said, you know, the incentive here is going to be, you know, larger yield and less cost and overall profits and, you know, more benefits to the community in the long run and all this kind of stuff, right? So they're playing the incentive card. And I think it's time that more people in the ecological movement play that incentive card as well. And it's, you know, I think it, like you say, it's great to give them permission. You know, it's like you need to be able to, if you can't win the game if you're not playing in the game. and so I think that if you're going to have large companies go in there with incentives, you need to let Mother Nature's incentives be well known as well, you know, and absolutely play every card, you know, talk about ancient wisdom and, you know, what was working before and is this really better? But, you know, is it, when you step away from it, is it only better from your perspective? Is it better for your children? Is it better for your grandchildren? You know, like, so playing with all that is super important.
Yeah, no, there's a million things that we want to spiral back to in what you just said, but I do love from the 80s the Center for Local Self-Reliance, you know, put this crucial theme on the table of price versus cost, and price is what an individual pays, cost is what the community pays, and it was such a good example of critique and liberation of imagination, because they would say, you know, the price of putting rock salt on the roads to melt snow is cheap. The cost is exorbitant in terms of destruction of, you know, water and erosion of infrastructure and so on. And then they would say, you know, for you know, a quarter of the cost, you know, you could do all these incredibly interesting things. So the liberate. I mean, Chicago hired them to think about widening roads for commuting, and they go, well, here's the price, here's the cost, and for a fraction of the cost, you could hardwire everybody's homes, and they wouldn't need to commute. You know, I mean, they're just again, just this opening of imagination. You know, did you know? In our spiraling romp here, it's like, you know, the ancient wisdoms and intrinsic to every culture kind of going backwards, like with word etymology, you know, if we take them back to words, to what they really mean, they are revelatory and liberating. You know, in a difficult sense, the word privilege means private law, and you go, oh, well, there you have that. But also I love, you know, the etymology of charisma comes from charis, charitable. True charisma is a charitable heart, and we love that. But in that same sense of
that.
And so if we take things back, we take them to their original kind of self-revealing, liberating spark, and maybe we're going to reach here, but I know you can do it, because that takes us back to ancient guiding wisdom and your love of megaliths.
Oh, yes. It is. I do love megaliths. So again, always referring to matter of trust. So first of all, just matter of trust, to me is a name that people are always asking, you know, why did you pick that name for the charity? And I think it's, you know, very interesting to have science, well, you're speaking to scientists and just look at this. At some point, you have to take that leap of faith, or there is a matter of trust. You can't continue to ask the questions. You'll just go down these rabbit holes, and you'll just never, you'll never be able to move forward, right? So, so, you know, there is a lot of metaphysics and physics in ecology and earth sciences, and so one of the things that I do is I have a huge wall that says why matter matters when you first walk into the industrial hub, and that's because I thought, you know, we're privileged to be able to have lots of field trips and corporate trips and people that come through this space, and adults have, you know, many of them have forgotten some of their chemistry and physics, and the kids from inner city schools, you know, like to be able to have, well, all schools, but especially the inner city schools, they like to be, you can just see them light up when they're holding something in their hands and they make these connections. Of like, oh, this is something that I am kind of interested in. Maybe clean energy is something, you know, is a direction I might want to go to in a profession and stuff. But we talk a lot about the states of matter, you know, solid, liquid, gases, and then plasma. And plasma being the free electron state, which a lot of people just don't, even many adults come to me and they mean plasma like the blood. And I'm like, no, it's actually, you know, lightning is plasma. And it's 99.99999% of the known universe is actually plasma, all these swirling galaxies and stars and everything is all plasma. And so so that is really interesting that that we then have a whole panel where we say, you know, even the like old cartoon that kids had of Avatar, or, you know, when you look at the beauty of studying the history of China or India and Native Americans, Pseudo America, all this always have earth, water, air, and fire. And for a long time, science was like, you know, well, fire is actually particulate matter and gas. But no, it turns out the blue part of the flame is plasma. So earth is obviously solid, water is obviously liquid, air is obviously glass, and then fire is plasma. And so it's like, oh, going full circle, and you go right back to that. And how wonderful and delightful is that? You know, how... for me, I just love that. I love the idea that we're standing on the shoulders of giants. It's very comforting. When I see, you know, a pyramid, you know, if you go to Machu Picchu, or, you know, wherever it is or Stonehenge, you know, I've traveled to a lot of these places to specifically just, be able to, feel the resonance, feel the solidity of these giant stones, and then know that, you know, inside there you're looking at all of the energy of these spinning you know, electrons around these nuclei, that this right here is the absolute of the macrocosm and the microcosm and the singularity. And it's for me, I just love that. For me, there's just so much inspiration in that, so much beauty, so much mystery. It makes everything exciting, and, you know, you want to be a part of it. You're here, you're materialized at Earth 101 to, you know, to be able to fully experience all of this stuff, and then you can get glimpses of what else there might be. And to get there, you have to, it's a matter of trust to get there. It's a leap of faith. And it's if it was all known, if there was no, if science figured everything out, that would be boring. It's the gap. It's the negative space that makes it, for me, makes it, it just gives it that extra exhilaration. That's what
right.
I think.
No, exactly. No, again, a million things, but yeah, to feel the resonance, you know, standing on shoulders of giants, yeah, and participate in the mystery, because when you bring up, you know, megaliths, and we globally, allies at the Center for Archaeoastronomy, again, these megaliths are everywhere, and on one kind of humble level of approach, going, well, what's going on there, especially at change of seasons or powerful lunar events like we had, you know, last night, where people got to see, if they got up very early in California, they got to see the blood red moon eclipsed, you know.
That's so beautiful. I did. We all woke up, my kids, and everybody's like, look. How amazing is that, you know, that you can have something, talk about a uniting force, you know, like if I was going to create a sim earth or something like that, you know, I would put, you know, like you have to have something like the bat signal, just something that like everybody can go and see. What do we do? Well, let's stick it up, you know, way up in the space. Let's make it big and white and glowing every single month. Get bigger, get smaller, so it's not like the static thing they ignore. You know, every once in a while, let's make it red, let's make it blue. You know, so I love it. I just love that. That's something that, and dogs react to it. You know, it's not just humans that are all looking at this thing. You know, so
yeah, no, that's great. Well, we're going to jump back. We're going to take a very, very short break and jump back into all of these things about our rising renaissance of river ingenuity that's so heartening. Our guest today is Lisa Gauthier of matteroftrust.org, and we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Grab my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, still recovering from psychic jet lag on journey back from India, but delighted, recovering even more well, wonderfully, as words come back to me, by hosting our perfect guest for today, Lisa Gauthier, as we animate the rising renaissance of reverent ingenuity and heartening things. Her website, amatteroftrust.org, and she's also on the board of biomimicry.org. So essential to where we're going of humans humbly cooperating with nature's evolutionary ingenuity. But I want to go back to our jump point of from biomimicry to megaliths, just for the fun of it, because, you know, so all over the world there are these megaliths, you know, that humans, mm-hmm. you know, built, you know, it's the sky earth connection story, as a wonderful wedding of science and myth. And yeah, and then we went to the lunar eclipse, and even the dogs like it. That's really great. But what's going on there, you know, especially at solstices and equinoxes, pretty much all over the globe, you know, O literal and symbolic light of sun, you know, come and illuminate this writing or this painting at the back of the cave, come and animate this guiding story that our community, you know, chooses. So that participatory dynamic, and for a community to gather together, you know, to say, what is our guiding story? And that's very, very much what you're doing at Matter of Trust and the upcoming People's Climate Summit as well. What is our story, right?
Yeah, so there's also a Greek myth called the Moon Spinners. Have you ever read about that?
No, tell me.
I think you would love it. I'll send it to you. But I believe the story is that there are these moon spinners, and they, I love it because I'm all into all things fiber, because it's my hair mat. So I'm fascinated by fiber. They are gathering moonlight from the ocean, and they collect it all, and then they have to wash it. So it's all collected in, and you have a new moon, and they're about to wash it before they weave it. But then as they're washing it, it slips out of their hands and it goes back. So every month, it's this cycle of all of these moon spinners trying to gather in all the moonlight, and then shoot, we have to wash it, and then losing it all back into the ocean. I think that it's really interesting looking at sort of energy points. One of the things that I, to sort of tie all of this together, is looking at how do, if you look at nodes. I was just speaking actually yesterday to Beth Ratner from Biomimicry, and Debbie Raphael from the Department of the Environment, San Francisco, and many others. We were thinking that it's really important that you have a few nodes that everybody can gather at, and then from that sort of like neurons just kind of stretch out and have all kinds of tours and walks and showcases and displays and open houses and all kinds of things everywhere that anybody can participate in a way to say this is how we are being more eco this year, or this is how far we have come, and this is why we're doing it for our own business or our customers or our family. It could be a house, it could be a dorm floor, it could be a classroom, it could be an edible schoolyard, it could be a recycling station, it could be a carbon-friendly menu at a restaurant. I mean, there's just so many possibilities, right? But looking at, how does this energy, how do you create a mobilization? How do you start to build momentum, And so we're very excited about having a few places. I'm also on the board of the Josephine Randall Museum in San Francisco, and they finally got everything cleared, and they're having a big grand opening in February. Everybody must come. But one of the fabulous things about Josephine Randall was that she was this woman in the 1920s that, was really key in getting water to San Francisco, and just passionate about California wildlife. And the museum is a tribute to all of this, but also, looking at what does the changing environment mean for California? And the Academy of Sciences in San Francisco also looking at, climate exhibits. John Foley is doing a lot of work on that, and San Francisco has over 16 million tourists a year. So it's a great way to have people come in and then, add to the conversation, take something back and bring it, home to their area. So I think nodes are really important. You want to have a place, whether it's a pyramid or a temple or a stone circle or an Autodesk conference room, whatever it is, but you need some place where you give everybody permission to share and to brainstorm and to develop and to connect and to again move the needle. We need now is a really great time for us to all put our noggins together and say, okay, let's not reinvent the wheel over and over again. Let's not have entrepreneurial itis. Let's not hold things too tight. Let's not be gatekeepers. Sorry.
No. I was just chortling.
Yes. So I just think that one of the ways to do that is to have sort of a beacon place, and I think that Governor Brown is brilliant in having San Francisco be one of these beacon places. The mayor of Los Angeles also, really does great innovations. All of these places that are looking at composting and zero waste and, looking at water issues. California has enormous water issues. And so you want to have, you want to be inclusive. You want to make sure that everybody feels that they're welcome. Like you say, everybody wants to be invited to the party. Everybody should be invited to the party because all of these experiences, these different experiences will add something. We can't just be speaking to the choir anymore. We don't have time for that. We need to talk to conventional industry. We need to look at infrastructure. We need to see, what did it take? Did in the 1880s, was there a group of people sitting around going, wouldn't it be crazy if we could, instead of, just looking at whale oil, what if we went somewhere where there's huge deposits of, you know, old algae oil, and what if we pumped it out of the ground, and then what if we shipped it, you know, all over the world, and then what if we took those tankers and then we went and we dug holes in the ground, like every few blocks in every city, and we put those tankers underground, and then we had people working at them, and they would just stick pipes into cars or carriages, you know, and then we could, we could have everybody driving, and then we could actually change the temperature of the earth in like 120 years. it would have been amazing to like sit on the wall, you know, of these meetings with the early pipelines, early oil, enthusiasts, you know, and say like, you know, hey, not a great idea. You know, to your point before, you know, it's like, did you know?
did you know?
Yeah.
Well, and also,
wouldn't work out for great. Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful. Reuben Snake, a great Native American late activist, going, hello, hello. Yeah, in Native American wisdom, he said, if we don't change our direction, we're likely to end up where we're headed. I always love that simple thing going, because here's where we're going. Yeah. Do you like that? I was chortling way back also just at our celebration of words. I loved you saying, put our noggins together. Noggins, what a great idea. And, you know, it's a little dodgier with pyramids, probably built by serfs and slaves, and we don't know about the megaliths in general. However, I do always like to employ it because, you know, in the sense of, you know, this quality that you're speaking of invitation and the essence of initiation of, you know, returning veterans and teenage kids. And I mean, everybody was always, come, we need you. We need you to help us build Stonehenge. We need you to do this great thing. You know, and that it's a simple thing of initiation. And yet we're the only human generation of the last several that has not initiated, you know, and left, you know, to gangs and whatever to be the toxic mimic Hoover is up of that invitation. So the invitation to the grand intrigue of the transformation of neighborhood and culture is such a crucial part of the Venusian art of the Mars dynamism that you're brewing and that we all, you know, yearn and dedicate to participating in as well. So, yeah, so I love that, you know, the mystery of the megaliths, but also the mystery of the megaliths is humbling, as we said, to look back at the quality of scientific measurement involved, and we're looking backwards in time to where science and guiding story, also known as myth, you know, were happily entwined, and these false separations. It's kind of like in Philip Pullman's, you know, Dark Matter trilogy or quadrilogy, you know, where the the evil aspects of science and the church are attempting to generate energy by separating children from their daemons, from their spirit animal companions, going, in that same way of the separating of, you know, science and myth, going, no, we just want the science part. And it's like, but the myth gives the moral cocoon that the science be used as, you know, dedicated to collective well-being. So this reunification, you know, of science and its guiding mythos and the symbolic languages that have been so useful. So we still want to keep playing, you know, biomimicry to megaliths, however we want to
Janine
play
will
with
be
that.
Like, what?
What? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
no, we'll
absolutely.
Have to... We'll bring,
so one of the interesting things that I look at too is with the when you say the permanence. You know, I believe there's an ancient Arabic saying that is, "Man fears time, and time fears the pyramids." Have you heard of that?
I love
that saying. To that end, I love that there's other sorts of timelessness that you see, and one such thing is a place in Paris. It's actually 5 kilometers south of Paris. It's called La Haye-les-Roses, and La Haye always makes me think of ley lines. It's a very unusual L'HAY with the two dots over the Y-E, and it's the largest rose garden in the world. It has, I think, over 3,500 different types of roses. And it's right on the line. If you ever read the Da Vinci Code, it's actually got one of the markers in there of the rose line that goes through the Louvre and, you know, to Dunkirk or whatever. This is an incredible line. what's interesting about that is that, you know, the roses will forever, you know, like seed and repopulate. You hear about this, like in deserts and stuff like that. It's like you can also build a timelessness through nature. You don't only have to do it through stone because of dormant seeds or because of, different ways that you can create a permanence. And I always find that beautiful too, that we're such fleeting, 100 years lifetime is a great lifetime, right? And here we are, these little things that are almost 100 degrees all the time. You know, that's amazing to me that we were 98.6 degrees, these little motors just... all this heat coming over us all the time, right? But it's fleeting, and what we can do is fleeting. But clearly, when you look at pollution, what we can do, it can, as a collective, can be major, you know? So it's a way for us to connect and feel the power of connection. As you know, yes, one little person, you can feel small. One lifetime can feel short, like many graveyards are full of forgotten amazing stories, right? We have, through the internet, through the fact that more than 50% of humanity now is living in urban areas, we can see from airplanes, we can see lights, you know, lighting up again as nodes, sort of, you know, from space. You look down and you see these sort of sprawls and these lines of light that we can make an impact. And so now the question is, how do we change the story? Like you like to say, how do you change the story to make sure that the impact that we're making is beneficial to future generations and to nature in general? And so I think, first, we really need humanity to let it sink in that we are making an impact, you know. And I think there's still some people that think that we're not making an impact, and I think that there's people that even, you know, that just feel personally they don't have a part in that impact. I don't know, maybe megaliths are part of that story. Maybe they're like, no, look, this is when you stand in front of a megalith, you're like, impact. There's something about it. So,
what do you mean by stand in front of a megalith and feel impact?
So the impact. For example, you know, when you go to a Google page and you type in something and it says how many millions of hits there are for that, you know, for that keyword or whatever it is, just sort of like that. It's like, okay, that's impressive. That's something for me, and that might not be for everybody, but for me, when I stand in something, in front of something that is matter, you know, like that, and I look at it, I physically feel an impact. I physically feel like this is moving mountains. This is impressive. Mm. And this has a permanence that is, you know, whereas a lifetime is, you know, lucky if it's 100 years, you know, these are now some dating is showing up to 12,000 years old, you know, there's discrepancies between whether something's 3,000 years old or 6,000 years old. And now they're saying with water and weathering, maybe some of these are things are 12,000 years old in Turkey, looking 14 to 18,000 years old, you know, and then there's all kinds of other numbers. The legacy of these things, to me, it's like a sign. Yes, you know, yes, beings can do something like this. And then if you, we can look at our generation and we can point to pollution, for example. Yay. We can point to Google, you know, and say, look, we've made an impact. All of these people connected on the keyword Kardashian, you know, or we could look up in the sky and we could look at pollution and we could say, wow, we did that.
We did that. That's our pyramid. Right. And I guess, I do think that humans have an impact, and part of me always wants to expand vocabulary, impact or influence, which actually is a word that comes to us from astrology, flowing in. So let humans have a curvy, participatory influence rather than a hard asteroid death dealing impact, you know, kind of thing. But yes, no, it is part of, you know, again, from biomimicry to megaliths. I think we can keep working on that for years. Going, all right, what is the connection there? Just we're putting it on the altar of mysterious desirable connectedness. But you know, these megaliths, these pyramids, they are full of story and wonder, and therefore humbling, and going, wow, who did this, and why, and how much is encoded, and you can study it forever. And in that sense, that quality of humble, as we know, the word human comes from humus, which means dirt, from which we get humble. I think our species being humbled is to return to its etymological assignment, going, we're meant to be humbled, you know, is a really good thing, going, whoa, oh my God. But also the guiding story. You know, and as I was saying, you know, Claire Cummings' crucial metaphor about GMO foods is, you know, we've never cut DNA, and that is analogous to cutting our ancestral guiding story, as would, you know, be ignorance or plowing over things, or would be cutting ourselves off from the long, wise, guiding narrative that does live in us, you know, in an endogenous way, awaiting invitation and quickening, which is so much of what, you know, your lively, involved, creative, megalithic self is doing with, you know, matteroftrust.org and also biomimicry.org. And maybe we could just bring up some of what we love about biomimicry. I mean, you work with Janine Benyus. I'm so impressed. I've hosted her on the radio twice, but not in years, and I want to have her
so
back.
So delightful.
She's so delightful because she's like the embodiment of liberating science, and so wonderfully playful. And she does let me take her scientific facts and turn them into kind of metaphoric guidance that let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors, and let our metaphors be derived from nature rather than machines, is always a good direction, like the composting project that you're involved in. But people have probably heard this, and I've certainly talked about it because it's, well, I guess, one of the latest things that Janine talked about on TED. But can you just tell us about the Kingfisher resolution to the Japanese high-speed train making a sonic boom?
Oh, yes. It's one of her favorite stories, I believe. So if you can imagine sort of a more snub-nosed train that was made in Japan incredibly fast, Shinkansen train, and when it was coming out of the tunnels in its early days, it was going, again, from one medium to another. So if you think of, you know, what's happening there pressure-wise when you go from solid to liquid or liquid to gas. You can kind of imagine that if you're taking an incredibly fast train and you're coming out of a tunnel into an open area, you could have a sonic boom. And so the neighbors were all like, oh, it's great, it's so fast, but you know, it's really just pretty disruptive. And so luckily for the engineer, the chief engineer in designing the product, he was a avid bird watcher, and he was watching this kingfisher. You can Google image kingfishers of these spectacularly beautiful blue birds with very long aerodynamic pointy beaks. And these birds would, you know, fly around, and then they would just tuck in and dive straight down into water. Like that, and without any splash, they would just go right into the water and catch, you know, whatever little creature they had seen from above. And so what happened was that he went back to the drawing board and he changed the front of the train to be a much more long, pointy nose to resemble the kingfisher beak. And not only did it stop making the sonic boom, but it actually made the train 15% more energy efficient. And so that's one of her famous, you know, like go-to stories of like ask nature. And go, you know, she has 4.5 billion years of R&D ahead of us. You know, look there first before you start designing things. Like you were saying, Ashley, you know, the solution is in the problem. You know, so maybe first you had to have the sonic boom before you could look to a bird diving into a, you know, into a lake and see that connection, you know. So just such a beautiful, beautiful. analogy.
It is great, and I like the idea of assuming kind of the kingfisher, you know, beak model. If we want to change from one element to another, going or step into like Hogwarts from one dimension to another. Anyway, that's all metaphysical play to one side. But I do.
I love Hogwarts. In my house, we have a room that we call the Room of Acquirement. and we stick everything in there. And on the outside of it, when we need something, we just like say, please, 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 please. The first thing that I go in there that I can find it quickly. But, yeah.
Well, that's great. No, that's true, and some of us are on the Hogwarts faculty. But it's also it does bring up another thing that, you know, which is, you know, I have encountered many 12-year-olds who wanted to study with me in a darling way, because they go, we want to go to Hogwarts,
I'll send you my kids.
Right. Well, it's really great. And you know, and I met many, you know, troubled 12-year-olds who were not fitting into the school system and ADD and couldn't read, but they could read Harry Potter in 2 days. Just
right.
Boom.
Exactly.
And again,
exactly.
It's kind of like, well, it's like the megalith. You know, the invitation to cultivation, you know, of one's own unique capacity to wed beauty and ingenuity to do stuff. You know, and you know, I think you know, Janine Benyus would be on our Hogwarts faculty, because it again is this invitation to liberating beauty, that there's no solution to anything without beauty. Again, opposite of aesthetic is anesthetic, and what Janine and you proffer is these beautiful, we are pattern tracking beings as a species. It's a good part of us. We all have a sense of beauty and symmetry, and as others have said, Catherine Austin Fitz, you know, said, you know, even criminals could make more money making a neighborhood beautiful than looting it. You know, evil is so stupid. So that idea also of the beautiful solutions. And there was a conference in Jordan on ecological design that was beautiful, and some of the winners were fantastic. They had, you know, it was you know, solar panels on long stems so that they looked like flowers, and they wafted in the wind, and they were simultaneously generating solar energy and wind energy at the same time. And we go, that's fantastic, and it's very beautiful. And you can sit underneath it and have a picnic. So it's, you know, because back to what you were saying, that you know, may the problems and the horror serve to our trickster nature and trickster in nature as incentives, going, well, that's horrible. Yeah. Use it as incentive, that grain of sand, we're going to make a bleeping pearl out of that thing. So our discomfort is an incentive, you know, and in our waning moments here, we're in our waning moments, but, you know, do you want to do a shout out about, you know, Matter of Trust and the upcoming conference? And we didn't even get to your composting project. We'll have to do much more.
Yes, so, okay, very quickly, globalcompostproject.org. Anybody can go there and pledge their love for compost. Say that you will take all of your kitchen waste and set it aside. That's one of my big passions. You can just do a pledge. It's very easy. But if you're really into compost, you could get into the forums and connect and learn and teach. And then we have a program called excessaccess.org. That's where anybody can post a wish for anything, and anybody can post surplus stuff that they want to get rid of in their house or office or business. And we match it online by zip code radius. That's another delightful zero waste project that we have. It's just, all of these are free. They're just open. We're on our way out.
But let us continue to cahoot in perpetuity, Lisa Gauthier. You are such a dynamic, megalithic force of ingenuity and beauty yourself in the world.
Thank you.
No, it is such a delight. And thanks always to Erica Bridgman, our wonderful board op. Thanks again, Lisa Gauthier, matteroftrust.org, as well as also biomimicry.org. This is all essential to where we are all going. Thank you so much. It's Caroline Casey, and we will reconvene next week. Woof, woof, woof.
Howdy, boys and girls. This is Chris Welch inviting you to join me every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 11 a.m. to noon for the Talkies. We'll discuss almost everything. The news, of course, and also theater, music, books, generally what's happening in our own backyard and what we can do about it. Your questions and comments are a vital part of the proceedings. That's the Talkies, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, 11 a.m. to noon on KPFA.
That's why we need a media that challenges the corporate power. When we cover war, we can't be brought to you by the weapons manufacturers. When we cover climate change, we can't be brought to you by the oil, gas, coal, nuclear companies. When we cover healthcare, we can't be brought to you by the insurance and the drug companies. We have to have a media that is a counterbalance to those in power. It's the only equalizing force.
That's why you listen to and support 94.1 FM, KPFA.
You're listening to KPFA 94.1, KPFB 89.3 in Berkeley, and KFCF 88.1 in Fresno.
KPFA, KPFB, in Berkeley, this Bobby, KPFA.